Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, here with your editor and publisher, Kevin Longquist. And Kevin, even though it's starting to get into a little bit of the dead times, Baylor does have a Johnny Carter safety out of Utah State that attended high school at Galena Park North Shore. And he is seriously considering Baylor. What do you think are the chances, and what are your evaluations?
Well, I think Baylor's got a pretty good shot at him. Obviously, he's a Texas kid. I think he has 1 year of eligibility, maybe two. I'm not 100% on that. I'm trying to get that locked down. But nonetheless, he's going to be at Baylor this coming weekend, starting Friday, I believe. He's currently in Indiana as of this recording. That visit was supposed to get started on Saturday, or on Wednesday, rather. And so it looks like the Bears are going against the Hoosiers for this. And that's okay. That's just kind of the way it goes and how you go with recruiting for guys in that for your program. And so that's kind of the way, the new way of doing things here. And obviously everybody knows, based on what Baylor did a couple of times, getting a couple of those kids on the defensive side last 2 weeks, and then getting and then potentially going after Carter today, is, or this weekend rather, that's where they need help. Most of all is on the defensive side of the football. They need help on the defensive front. They need help in the secondary. They actually could have used help in the linebacker spot, but there doesn't seem to be too much of a great, menu out there, if you will, of potential candidates to do that for them. So they're kind of have to make it the best of all this and go with this. But they need more secondary help, and they need safety help. This, if they get a Johnny, if he winds up choosing Baylor over Indiana and others, it's a shot in the arm, because you got a guy who's sure tackler. I mean, he's consistent, too, because he converted from a receiver to a safety the last before he got his career really going there at Utah State. You can't ask for anything more consistent when you go 45 tackles in 2021, then you go 44 tackles in 2022. He also has a penchant for creating turnovers. I think he has, between fumble recoveries and interceptions, he has about five, and that's always going to be a thing. And that's something that this defense, as I mentioned in the story, advancing his potential rival, is that's where this defense really suffered in 2022, is the fact that they did not have the penchant for creating turnovers. Now, we got spoiled by the 2021 team because they were just picking the ball off left and right or whatever, and it was just crazy how they were doing this. But I think what you have to look at, though, is the fact that you need to create turnovers, and that was a huge difference between the 2021 team and the 2022 team that would create something there. And I think it makes a big difference in terms of how you set that mentality, how you set that goal for yourself. And that's what Matthew Pollage did. You know, Matthew was running the safeties when he was here at Baylor 2 years ago. And he just has a way for connecting with kids and making sure that they will have a penchant for creating things, not only from a tackling standpoint, but also from the standpoint of being playmakers, turning a game on a turnover, that sort of thing. And that's going to be important for Baylor moving forward here. And that's what they're going to need in this 2023 defense. Because they're missing so many things. It might be, I'm going to say this, I think this defense can probably be pretty decent, but it also has smells to me that it could be a little bit of a high risk, high reward kind of thing too, because of the lack of experience that they have and the lack of depth overall from what they have in some respects.
Now, did Carter bloom at Utah State because Baylor, obviously, you know, he's was at Galena Park North Shore, so it seems like Baylor could have grabbed him out of high school if they wanted to. So I would think he bloomed at Utah State.
He did, and in fact, I was looking at his recruiting history when he was at Galena Park North Shore, and he had Utah State. Let's just put it this way, at the time of his signing with Utah State, he flipped from UTEP to Utah State. So that tells you where that was at. And then I think he actually had Indiana as an offer. He only had three schools that offered him at the time. So he was a late guy for when he got picked. I, by the way, I should tell people, too, if people remember that amazing state championship game between North Shore and Duncanville, and there's been a lot of them in the state championship game, but the one that ended on the Hail Mary, he was in that game. But anyway, I think from the standpoint of his development at Utah State. And here's the interesting thing, because he signed with Utah State as a wide receiver. Then he was converted to a safety because they needed help in the secondary, and he can play both sides of the ball. And it probably that's where his biggest value was. And I think that's kind of where this all kind of got going for him to develop this knack. And of course, when you get that, when you get, and I think it's easy to convert. It's kind of like when you flip from wide receiver to secondary, you kind of understand how both sides of the ball of that play because you're so interacting with that. It's the same thing like if a running back switched to linebacker or linebacker switched to running back. And we kind of saw that at Baylor a couple of years ago. But you know what I'm saying? It's like they can make that switch because they understand the principles of what that position does and what they can bring to it. And again, this team really needs safety help in the worst way. And I think that's going to be important for them to get some leadership back there because they are so thin with that part of the position group.
And this is probably going to be a one-year fix.
Yeah, at the minimum. I mean, it's and I think people are starting to understand as far as, you know, that is concerned. What's concerning here is the fact that they have to put themselves in a position where you have to have your transfers, your portal transfers, serve as a bridge. You'd obviously like to get all of your portal transfers with multiple years of eligibility remaining, which is what, you know, Baylor has in several of these guys, and several of them are one-year guys too. But if you get a mix of those guys who are playing both sides of the ball, you have multiple years left, that makes a big difference because they've already gone through the rigors of a college program in terms of just the strength and conditioning and understanding how the workouts, you know, fall camp, spring ball, that sort of thing, how those things go, or just how a standard offseason program runs. So when they come into a new program, they kind of get the idea of the expectations. Terminology is different. You know, things that they will stress, it will vary from school to school, but they just get the next level things that you have to do. And I think that's where Baylor, which has been more aggressive, look, they've got two portal additions in this cycle. They had eight in the winter, so they have 10 new players that are coming in just from the portal over the last couple of years, over the last several months. So you can see that there's a change in philosophy for Baylor versus what they were doing the year before, where they really weren't going after the portal that much. Now, part of that, too, stems on the fact that Baylor's approach with the NIL, which has been stagnant to basically behind, has started to pick it up a little bit better, and they've been more and more, where they've kind of have to kind of get that part going. I don't know to what extent the NIL's effectiveness for 2024 signees in all sports is going to be. But at the very least, get yourself organized so that moving forward with the 2025 class, you can be in a better position because it's always going to be changing that sort of thing.
One of the things which has happened with the NIL and the wide open transfer portal is if you think of it as like in the NFL, if at the end of each season anybody who had a good year could null the rest of their contract and put themselves back on the open market. That's what you're dealing with now.
Sure, and I think that's part of it. You know, again, as I mentioned, you know, in Baylor's case, and people have heard me say this maybe to the point where they're saying, "Shut up, Kevin." But you know, Baylor did not need to wait for the NCAA's guidance on how to run your NIL program because the NIL can't. I mean, because the NCAA can't really control this. To a great extent. They just can't. And I know that they put somebody on, I think it was Miami or somebody, they put them on probation or something like that. But it was like, you can't really govern them that hard to a great extent because it runs third independent of the school. And you really can't, you know, let's just say it this way. As coaches, you can't really sell the NIL program, but you can say we have it. And maybe you can wink, wink, nudge, nudge, put them in touch with the people who run the program, and they can kind of talk about that. But that's kind of where we're at. And the days of thinking that Baylor or any other school could just say, well, we're just this school, and we do this, this, and this. That's great. You got a package deal you got a money deal for so-and-so? Because that's kind of how this is going these days. Whether anybody likes it or not, that's the reality that we face. It may not be fun. And it's taking some of the joy out of following college athletics when it's like this. But that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah, and Baylor's going to have to get over because they walked on eggshells after the big blow-up mm-hmm. in 2016, 2017. They mm-hmm. walked on eggshells, and you can't walk on eggshells right now. You've got to go out and hit people.
Yeah, I get that to an extent where Baylor kind of probably felt like, you know, because of what happened with the sexual assault scandal, that they're going, oh, gosh, let's make sure that we don't trip all over ourselves before we do anything. I kind of get that, you know, or the wincing dog kind of thing, like when you raise your hand to your dog and it'll close its eyes because you think it's going to get hit. I kind of get that mentality where Baylor's at. But at the same time, they might have been over cautious when it came to this sort of thing, in my judgment on this, because where it's cost them is just getting involved and being an aggressive player in this. So they're having to catch up on where they're at. And so, and I can pretty much tell you that played a role as to why Deuce Adams, the New Braunfels quarterback and New Braunfels Canyon quarterback, went to Louisville and didn't go to Baylor when he announced in April, or played a role, I should say. Yeah.
Yeah, before we close out on the portal, that's pretty much wrapped right now. Who is in there. They can still sign, but nobody else can enter the portal right now.
Right, closed at midnight on Sunday, the 30th. That two-week period ended. So now guys can take as many visits as they want, and we'll see what happens. And by the way, we should point out, I had somebody check for me, and the only one that looks like that got into the portal during this last two-week period was the wide receiver Jalen Ellis. I know I had mentioned that the running back Jordan Jenkins and offensive lineman Connor Hefferman were candidates to do that, but apparently that did not happen. So that's what we're looking at here, and so here's where we are.
Hey, that's better than what Colorado's going through right now.
Yeah.
How'd you like to be trying to put up a depth chart for Colorado right now?
Yeah, that's not. I would have said, why don't we wait till fall camp? And so.
All right. Now in the NFL draft, Siaki Ika did get drafted. I think he was like third round.
Late third round by Cleveland, right?
Yeah, late third round by Cleveland. Connor Galvin did not get drafted, nor did anyone else. I still think Ika was drafted more off potential than senior year performance.
Mm-hmm.
But seven guys did either sign a contract or get invited to a camp.
Which is great. I mean, and that's fine too. Now, we obviously know in terms of, you know, the reality of this where – and so the undrafted free agents, for those if you didn't see it, where Connor Galvin signed a deal with Detroit, Ben Sims signed with the Minnesota Vikings, Mark Milton signed with Carolina, and Christian Morgan also signed with the Green Bay Packers. Sorry to hear that for him, but anyway. anyway, I'm just kidding. But you know, it's kind of what this team was this year, and I think a lot of average to disappointing seasons by a bunch of seniors, Connor Galvin right in there is the reason why Baylor only had one draft choice. And, you know, I had mentioned a lot about Galvin. And I said, Galvin is going to be a late third day guy, like probably late in the seventh round, or he's going to go undrafted free agent. I actually think that when you kind of get to the middle of the seventh round of the draft, you better, why don't you just hope that your name doesn't get called? Because if it doesn't, you're going to probably sign the same kind of free agent deal that you would as a seventh round draft choice. So there's really no difference in that. So I think, look, the only thing that you can say, with the exception of maybe the first top three rounds, the draft choices in those rounds versus 4 through 7 and undrafted free agents, and then guys who got invited to camps, which is a different thing than free agency, is you get an opportunity. And those, and you know, the top three rounds, those organizations are going to do everything they can to make sure that those kids succeed, because they've committed a bunch of dollars to them and they want to see some ROI on that. So they are going to give them every opportunity. For a guy who's invited to a camp or an undrafted free agent, it's a couple thousand here or a couple thousand there. Or maybe it's, you know, for a free agent deal, maybe you fork out $100,000 guaranteed salary. And if he gets cut, what is it to you? You're in a billion-dollar industry anyway in the NFL. And so, but again, those guys just have to take advantage of their opportunity, see what happens, and then make the best of it.
Well, the great thing about being an undrafted free agent is you can talk to anybody, and you can try and find a team that may be a little thin at the position you're trying to make.
Well, and not only that, but of course, you know, you're always going to have representation. So let's just say from Galvin's standpoint, I'm pretty sure that the Lions were among, you know, three or four teams that his representatives were looking at, or, you know, were talking to in great detail. And so that guy is going to try and find the best, opportunity for Connor to sign with. And obviously Detroit was that. And so I did find that interesting, by the way. That is interesting, though, that you think about it. Those undrafted free agents, with the exception of Mark Milton, three of those guys signed to the NFC North. And so I think it's just coincidence in a thing, but nonetheless. Again, these seven guys have an opportunity. Obviously with Apu, I think the one thing about Apu, he is such a free spirit. For me, that's a maddening quality to it. But it's a thing where he is a wide body and a nose tackle, a guy that needs to eat up space. He's a guy that can probably stick around in the NFL for a couple of years if he does the work that is expected of him, keeps his nose clean, so to speak, and just is a guy that can be someone who can play on third down or can spell maybe for 15 snaps a game and provide that, you know, that presence in the middle where Cleveland's defense won't see a drop-off, you know, once their starters get off the field or they rotate them out.
Yeah, it would be nice if he could get into condition where he could play three straight downs consistently for the game.
Well, yeah, but I just don't think that happens in the NFL. That's just not the way it's structured anymore, I don't think. I mean, really, just the way the game has changed. Now, I think from the college standpoint, Could he have played three? He should have, but he was mainly a two-down guy. But I think in this case, with him starting out with the Browns, and I don't know if they're really thinking that he's going to be the starter at the nose for them. I really haven't read up a lot on that. But anything can change by the time you get to camp. Camp in late July, early August, when the season gets going in September, to find out really what he's going to bring to you and that sort of thing. That's what you're going to find out, what he can actually bring, and especially when they get into the preseason games.
All right, let's move on. And before we close out, we want to do basketball. Yves Missi, did I pronounce that correct?
I think you did, yeah.
Whoa, all right. Now, he has reclassified from a 24 to a 23, mm-hmm. and should be showing up at Baylor for basketball this summer, mm-hmm. and what can you tell me about him, and how old is he?
Well, I don't know about his age. I mean, who knows anybody's age in basketball? But anyway, he's a guy that brings a presence. Look, Baylor's roster completely is flipped over from the team that got to the tournament last year. It's crazy how much turnovers. I mean, their whole backcourt is gone, okay? And then, of course, Flo Thamba's gone. And then Jonathan Chamo-Chachua will be back. But again, I just don't think Jonathan is going to be that guy in the presence that you need. And Olajuwon is going to be basically your big legitimate presence in the block. But, you know, with Missi, you know, he was born in Belgium, but he's thin too, 6'10", 215. Again, I said born in Belgium, grew up in the Cameroon, and then he played at prolific prep in California. And, you know, he's a guy that, you know, he was the number two prospect in the state of California, according to a couple of others, recruiting services, number 11 in our 2024 Rivals 150. And it's a really great signing class with Mirolito and Jacoby Walter. I mean, that's going to be a really, really young team that Baylor's going to have next year, but super talented. So, and again, with the fact that, you know, your presence is gone with, you know, with Flo Thamba out of eligibility, he's gone. Zach Loveday, well, you know, like he brought anything, but he didn't. But I mean, we didn't have an inside, but that's an inside presence that they, you know, technically lost off the roster. Just Baylor's roster. Here's what I think with this Baylor team is going to be. I think they're going to be really talented, and I think it's going to be really, really bumpy once they get the 23-24 season underway. And they might look ugly in a couple of games because you are looking at about four new faces there, at least just coming in from either transfer or the signing class. But this was important for them because Baylor really hasn't had a lot of great, you know, hasn't had a lot of guys, you know, come in from the portal except for the kid out of Virginia Commonwealth. And that's all they've got at this point. And so you've got those three recruits and then him. And I think that's, you know, where Baylor, like I said, they're going to need some help. And if for whatever reason, Adam Flagler decides to come back because the way he worded his "I'm out of here" speech, you know, that sort of thing, you kind of have to watch that and see what he does there. Now, he has until the end of the month to make a decision on what he's going to do. You know, and for Flagler, and again, the indication was, last we had found out about it, the indication was that Adam was going to stick with his intentions to stay in the draft and not come back to Baylor. Now, if that's what he wants to do, go for it, man. I mean, you only get to do this once in your life, so if that's what you want to do, for sure do it. And then, of course, they have Jalen Bridges, who announced, what was it? I think it was a week ago, maybe it was 2 weeks ago, that he announced that he was going out for the draft, but he was going to maintain his eligibility. I still think that Jalen's going to come back. I think he's going to go through the process because there's a couple of NBA things that are going to be going on during the course of this month where he's going to get some feedback. I really think Jalen will be back this year because I think he's projected to be a second-round pick. And second-round picks in the NBA draft, those are not guaranteed contracts. So, again, more things to flesh out for this team moving forward, that's for sure.
Where I see, particularly with this team being as young as it's going to be, where I think they're really going to have problems is when they have to start doing change-ups as they start interacting with teams that have different offensive styles and defensive styles. You remember a couple of years ago, West Virginia, by running that full court press the whole game,
right,
used to just tear people up with that.
Right.
And I think that unorthodox moves on offense and defense are really going to discombobulate them.
I would think, you know, we'll see about that. I mean, I will say this, you know, I mentioned Jaden on the transfer from VCU. I think that's where his veteran leadership and experience, even though obviously he's just going to get to know the Baylor team as well, but I think that's going to be important for him to kind of bring a presence in there because that's going to be a pretty young backcourt back there, and to have somebody back there who's big like he is and then possibly could add something too along with Langston Love will be important to kind of help settle things for some young talented guys who are going to have to make the adjustment to Division I Power 5 ball.
All right. And Drew has always had his best success when he's been able to put together maybe not the most talented guys, but guys that are willing to stay for a few years and become a real team. Do you see that potential with this young group, or is that horse out of the barn for everybody now?
Well, I think that's kind of everybody. I mean, it's just a matter of just it's – you know, the one thing that really killed this Baylor team last year was the fact that they just did not play very well defensively. That's where it really hurt them. They just weren't great in the block. And they were giving up a ton of points, and that's where they kind of got burned, and they didn't play. And obviously, they played really bad defense against Creighton. They got knocked out that way, too. So I think the one thing they're just going to have to do is just get better at this. They're just going to have to get better defensively. They just have to. They don't have a choice.
All right, you want to close it out for us?
Sure. So obviously we'll keep news on I will be out of town this weekend, folks. I have some family stuff that's going on. So I will be out of town basically Thursday all the way through Sunday. I'll be back on Monday there. But, of course, we'll monitor the Johnny Carter situation if that breaks and if anything happens on the high school recruiting front as far as a breaking story is concerned. We'll manage that as well. Don't forget the baseball team does not play this weekend because they're wrapping up finals, I think it is. But, of course, that team has one more series to go in the Big 12, and that's TCU, and they've got to find a way to sweep that series if they have any hopes of making it to the Big 12 tournament. But, nonetheless, we'll keep you posted on things when it comes to coaches on the road and other additions to the roster, both on the basketball and football front. And we will talk to you all next week on the Sikkim Sportscast.